Okay, I would like to talk about viscosity, how to get viscosity from black hole physics. And I'm going to describe the work that I have done with Policastro, Giuseppe Policastro, Andrei Starinets, who are not here. Also, I've mentioned the work of Chris Herzog and the work I've done with Pasha Kovtun and Starinets, both Herzog and Kovtun are here in the audience. And I also will mention some work by Butcher, Alex Butcher, and Jim Liu. Okay, the notion of viscosity was introduced in physics very early in the 19th century by Navier. And the name Navier now appears most likely in the name of the Navier-Stokes equation. Stokes didn't derive this equation. It's the work of Navier, somehow the name sticks. So the S frequently in physics we see. So let's look at this equation again. So it describes the time evolution of a viscous fluid. It's a first order differential equation. And if you have the initial condition, you can predict how the fluid would behave at later time. And the viscosity is the term one, will stay in one of the term here, this eta. So if you forget about all the other terms, it looks like a diffusion equation. So dt, d over dt of something is equal to eta Laplacian of this v. So this equation is very successful. It describes a wide range of physical systems that we have, like a fluid. So from the real-world experience that we have, we can expect that any system at finite temperature would behave somewhat like a fluid. And that's because if you look at the system at very long wavelength and very long time, somewhat the bulk motion of this fluid will be relevant. So we expect that at the largest time and length scale, we have a hydrodynamic description of any finite temperature system, including finite temperature relativistic quantum field theories. So in this hydrodynamic theory, we expect to have a description in terms of some effective degrees of freedom. And what are these degrees of freedom? I will call them the hydrodynamic variables. The densities of conserved charge should be hydrodynamic variables. Well, by the density of conserved charge, I mean the energy density, the momentum density, T0i, and the zeroth component, the zero time component of any conserved charge, J0. And in any theory, we always have these two, T0, 0 and T0i, and depending on the models, we can have one or more none of these conserved global charges. And the reason why the global charge is a hydrodynamic variable is very simple. If I have a big lump of charge localized in space, and around that is the thermal medium, then this lump will slowly disappear. But the disappearance is very slow because the diffusion process takes place under a time which is large when I take the size of the lump to infinity. Okay, so there are also other quantities that can appear in the hydrodynamic description of a fluid. And these are the usual Goldstone bosons. So at zero temperature, if the theory breaks some global symmetry, we know that we can write down an effective theory of the Goldstone bosons, and that describes the low energy dynamics. If we heat this system up a little bit where the symmetry is still broken, then we have this phase of the condensate that will be a hydrodynamic variables. And that has been seen in helium-4. Helium-4 is a superfluid. It behaves hydrodynamically, so it has one extra degree of freedom, that is the phase of the condensate, compared to the usual liquid like water that we see. And that's why the hydrodynamics of helium-4, superfluid helium-4, is so different from the hydrodynamics of water. Okay, there are another possibility for hydrodynamic variables that are the unbroken U1 gauge fields. So suppose I have a billion, well, I suppose I have a theory with some photon U1 gauge field. For example, I take the standard model and heat it up above the electro weak phase transition. Then the hypercharge becomes a U1 gauge field, and the symmetry is unbroken so that the photon has a long correlation length. And we have to take that into account in the hydrodynamic description. And magnetohydrodynamics is the theory that takes into account both the motion of the fluid and the magnetic field in the medium. So we also have an example where that is necessary. So I will be concentrating on the theory that have only density of conserved charges as the hydrodynamic degrees of freedom. So when we have identified the degrees of freedom, now we have to specify the dynamics of these degrees of freedom. And the structure of the hydrodynamics theory is the subject of this transparency. So we would like to have, at least I would like to have a Lagrangian description, an effective Lagrangian of these degrees of freedom, possibly on the so-called closed time path or Schwinger-Keldysh contour. But for some reason, I haven't found that in the literature. So that is a worthwhile goal to achieve, but it has not been achieved right now. What has been done is people wrote down the equation of motion, like the Navier-Stokes equation, some generalized form of this Navier-Stokes equation. And in general, it looks like the conservation law. So d mu nu is equal 0 for the simplest hydrodynamic theory. And then we add to these equations the so-called constitutive equations. So that constitutive equations is required if you want to close the system of equation. Here we have four equations for 10 component of the stress energy tensor. So we want to express six of the component in terms of the remaining four. So this is one, the so-called constitutive equation here. The Tij is pressure plus term that we expand in first in the derivative of the hydrodynamic variables, and that gives rise to the viscosity terms. And also we can add noise to describe fluctuations. And that formulation I found a little bit, well, I found clumsy, but for simple application it works. So for example, if you want to know the speed of sound or the attenuation of sound, we can use this formulation and linearize the equation and find that. Okay, so the idea I want to pursue here is to use the gauge gravity duality to explore the hydrodynamic regime of finite temperature field theory. And we know that finite temperature field theory has a dual description in terms of string theory on a black hole with a translationally invariant horizon, or I will call that a black brain. So one of the examples of such a configuration is the so-called D3 metric that has it is flat in three spatial directions, and it's curved in other directions. So here is the form of the metric. It has two parameters. One is the what's called R naught, and the other is the big R. And I will consider the regime when R naught is smaller than R, and the metric is flat. When the radius goes to infinity, it goes to ADS 5 process 5 in this intermediate region, and then it has a horizon at some value of the radial coordinate. And the metric from here down to smaller R is dual to n equal 4 super Young-Mills theory at finite temperature, which is equal to the temperature of the black hole, which is proportional to R naught. So when we say we want to explore the hydrodynamics of the system, we want to perturb it from the thermal equilibrium. And here's just a cartoon of what would happen if we perturb the system. We have in the thermal equilibrium a flat horizon that is located at the constant radial coordinate R naught. And then one way to visualize the perturbation is to say that we can make this location of the horizon spatial dependent. And then we can think about that configuration as a configuration at the temperature of the black hole is a function on this flat horizon. So it is clearly not an equilibrium situation. We know that the black hole is characterized, in equilibrium is characterized by only the temperature and a few other parameters. So the system will try to relax it, to relax to thermal equilibrium. And the process of relaxation is dual to the process of relaxation in the hydrodynamic regime of N equal 4 Supiamiot's theory. So what effectively we have done is to generalize black hole thermodynamics to black brain hydrodynamics, where the concept with the temperature, chemical potentials are spatial dependent.
So you're calculating the viscosity of this black brain, right?
Yeah. Okay, so we want to compute the viscosity of this black brain. So the easier thing to compute is actually the entropy. The entropy we know from Bekenstein and Hawking is proportional to the area of the horizon, and the proportionality coefficient is just the Newton constant. If we apply that to N equal 4 Supi Young-Mills, then we find that the entropy is equal to 3/4 of the entropy of the Boltzmann thermalized gas of these particles content of the N equal 4 Supi Young-Mills. And the 3/4 is just the reflection of the fact that we are doing computation at large tube coupling instead of at small tube coupling. So however we want to compute viscosity, we want to understand whether there is a gravitational interpretation of like this for the viscosity. So now let's look at how viscosity is described in general physics textbook. We have two plates, and we put these two plates, put the liquid in between these two plates and slide one plate with respect to the other, and we measure the friction force that acts on the two plates. And this force is proportional to the area of the plate multiplied to the gradient of velocity, and the proportionality coefficient here is eta. So it's a nice intuitive definition of viscosity. Unfortunately, it's not formal enough for us to use that for N equal 4 Supi Young-Mills theory. So we want something more formal. And the formula was the formula that I will be using is called the Kubo's formula. It was derived by Kubo's in the 60s. It's a very nice, remarkable formula. It relates the viscosity that was defined intuitively in the previous transparency with something that is with a certain correlation function in finite temperature quantum field theory. So we take the a component of the stress part of the stress momentum tensor, which is off-diagonal or traceless. We take that component and compute the imaginary part of the retarded Green's function at low frequency and low momentum. And then we take the momentum, free momentum to zero, and then measure the slope of this imaginary part at omega equals zero. And that is equal to the viscosity that we have in the previous transparency. It has to go to zero. The imaginary part is an odd function of omega, so it goes to zero. It's not up, well, it can go to zero as any odd power of omega.
Yeah, like omega cube, for example.
For example, omega cube. And we, if I compute that at zero temperature, I will see that it goes to zero as omega cube. However, at finite temperature, we will find that it goes to zero as omega. Okay, so this is the one of the Kubo's formulas for that express kinetic coefficients hydrodynamic theory in terms of strictly defined correlation functions in field theory. Now we have this formula and we can understand the physical interpretation of viscosity in gravity. So we look at the IDS-CFT dictionary and the stress energy the stress energy tensor of the boundary theory is coupled to the gravitons in the bulk. And there is a remarkable paper by Klebanov that precedes the IDS-CFT correspondence that is also very important in the history of the development of this field. Is that in this paper, Klebanov considered the absorption of a graviton by a stack of B3 brains. So he sent a graviton toward this brain and asked the question, what is the probability that this graviton is absorbed by the degrees of freedom that lives on the brain? Because of this coupling, H mu nu, T mu nu, the graviton can become, for example, two gluons of the gauge theory that lives on this brain. So he computed that at zero temperature, we can also generalize that computation to finite temperature. And then we can relate the absorption cross section of this graviton by using the optical theorem to the imaginary part of the retarded Green's function of the stress energy tensor, the component of the stress energy tensor that coupled to the polarization of the graviton that we are considering. So for example, if I consider a graviton polarized in the xy direction, then I get the absorption cross-section, which is exactly the same expression that I have in the previous transparency for the viscosity. So the viscosity can be understood as something that is proportional to the absorption cross-section of the low energy gravitons that falls perpendicular to the brains. So it has to fall perpendicularly to the brain because we want to take the limit and the three momentum goes to zero in the Kubo's formula. Yeah.
In 1987, the Popov paper actually considered the mass of scalars formed by the three brains. It was a paper of Popov, Popov, and Popov, which did that.
Okay, so, good. Klebanov considered scalar. Is that correct?
Yeah.
I should say that. Okay, so the viscosity is proportional to the absorption. So we have to take the limit in the Kobo's formula that omega goes to zero. So we are interested in the absorption in the limit cross section in the limit of zero frequency of the graviton. So the problem now becomes a purely classical problem like the scattering problem in quantum mechanics. We send a plane wave that has only that is a linear combination of incoming and outgoing waves at infinity. And we put the boundary condition that it's this horizon is purely absorptive; only one wave can travel. The wave have to travel to the inside of the horizon. We solve something like the wave equation for this component graviton, and we find that we have to solve some equation, and we can solve that. However, the computation of this absorption cross section can be made very easy by using two theorems. The first theorem states that the equation for the for HXY, component of the traceless part of the stress tensor is the same as the equation of a scalar. And this statement is known for people doing the theory of cosmological perturbation. The equation for a tensor mode in the universe is the same as the equation for the scalar. Massless, minimally coupled scalar. And there is, well, and this theorem can be proven by to a rather wide class of backgrounds. And there is another theorem proven by Das, Gibbons, and Mathur, which states that the limit, in the limit when omega goes to zero, the absorption cross section of a scalar is equal to the area of the horizon. So then the consequence of this two theorem is very, very nice. We know that the the viscosity is the absorption cross section divided by the coefficient that we can find out. When we take omega goes to zero, the absorption cross section is equal to the area of the horizon. So, but the area of the horizon is also the entropy. So the ratio of the viscosity and the entropy density is equal to 1 over 4 pi in N equal 4 Sophie Young-Mills theory. Okay, so the caveat in this calculation is that in this calculation that I have shown you, there is a role of the flat, Minkowski flat region of space at R much bigger than R, and we have to rely on the assumptions of Das, Gibbons, and Mathur. That is the most restrictive among the assumption of the two theorems. Okay, we can also do a honest IDS-CFT calculation of the correlation functions. And Maldesina suggested that the if I look at the Penrose diagram of a IDS black hole, it has two parts that it has. When can they identify two boundaries where we can put two sources for the finite temperature field theory, and that map very nicely to the closed time path or Schwinger-Keldysh formulation of quantum field theory. So Chris Herzog and I look at that in more detail. And we found that we can formulate IDS-CFT prescription to compute the computation of the Schwinger-Keldysh propagators and any point functions, three-point, four-point functions, by writing down the relations that say that the partition function of quantum field theory, when we put two sources on the two part of the Schwinger-Keldysh contour, is equal to the exponent of a classical action when we put the two source as we interpret the two sources in the field theory as the boundary values for the bulk field. So it works in a way very similar to the usual ADS-CFT correspondent, except here that we have to be very careful about the behavior of fields at the horizons, but we have to impose a certain boundary conditions on the horizon to make this work. So once we have the partition functions, we can differentiate and compute the propagators, the Schwinger-Keldysh propagator from that using a relation in thermal field theory. We find the retarded propagator. And for example, if I compute that for the correlation of the energy density in N equal 4 super Young-Mills, I find in the low Q limit, momentum goes to zero, I find a very simple expression that has a pole at Q naught equal Q divided with the square root of 3, and there is a small imaginary part. So this is just the sound wave in the N equal 4 super Young-Mills plasma. So it's remarkable we can perturb the gravitational configuration and observe a sound that propagates with the speed of the relativistic sound, and we also see the sound attenuation, and from that we can also find the viscosity, and it's equal to the viscosity that we observe, or we computed from the Kubo's formula. And then we can use this method, and there is also another method to compute the viscosity, and we can compute for a wide variety of background, like the D3, the theories living in M2 and M5 brains. We know eta, we know s, we take eta over s, and it's equal to 1 over 4 pi in all these theories. And this result was obtained by Chris. And we can also look at the deformations of N equal 4 super Young-Mills, where we know the metric at finite temperature. And for these deformations, Bushian and Liu look at some of these deformations, and they also found that the ratio is equal 1 over 4 pi. And Buchel actually showed prove the theorem that for all metric of a certain form like this, rather general form, and some conditions on the Riemann tensor that is also satisfied for all this background, eta over s has to be equal to 1 over 4 pi. Now, we know the result is relevant for the theory at strong two coupling. Now, I can ask the question, what is the dependence of the ratio of eta over s in n equal 4 super Young-Mills theory as a function of two coupling? Now, at weak coupling, one can estimate this ratio. The entropy density is T cubed. The viscosity is the energy density multiplied to the mean free path. So the mean free path at weak coupling is very long because particles collide not very frequently with each other. So this ratio is parametrically bigger than 1 in the limit when the top coupling goes to 0. And we know that this ratio goes to 1 over 4 pi at strong coupling, and we can compute the first correction in inverse power of the top coupling. And it comes out to be this. The entropy grows and the eta also grows, but the ratio, the viscosity grows faster than the entropy as we go to smaller coupling. So this suggests that this ratio eta over s is, so we make a conjecture, one can make a conjecture that this eta over s is bigger than 1 over 4 pi for all quantum field theories at finite temperature. So we have to accept here that, well, the argument here is very hand-waving, that the at weak coupling this ratio is big. If I think about this n equal 4 super Young-Mills, this is the theory with the strongest coupling possible. So this ratio achieve its minimum in this theory with 1 over 4 pi coupling. Also, the 1 over 4 pi ratio is somewhat special. It is the same ratio for a wide class of theories. So there is something special about this ratio. So one can make this conjecture. Now, how about non-relativistic systems? So the non-relativistic system can also be thought of as a relativistic system with a chemical potential just above the mass threshold in the theory, so that all particles are non-relativistic. So now, a very nice thing happened when we try to restore the power of C in this ratio. If I take the dimension, if I compute the dimension of eta using this formula, and then the dimension of eta is h bar divided by the volume. And the dimension of the entropy density is entropy over volume, but entropy is dimensionless, so it's 1 over the volume. And eta over s is h bar and contain no power of c whatsoever. This conjecture eta over s bigger than 1 over 4 pi is also non-trivial if I apply that to non-relativistic system. So the first system I look at is water, where we look at with Pasha and Andrei studying it. For water, string theory missed by a factor of 380, which is not a big deal. Now, can we find anything that has eta over s smaller than the ratio for water? So we spent some night looking at the internet database for the viscosity of different substances, and here I plot the ratio for helium, nitrogen, and water at just some arbitrarily chosen pressure as a function of temperature, and we see that for helium it goes down to a value of about 9 times larger than the value for n equal 4 super Young-Mills or theories with n, but it never goes below 1. And we couldn't find any substance where that goes below 1. Yeah. So here, the cutoff here, yeah, so the cutoff here actually is the lambda transition in helium. If I found data for the viscosity of of helium, of superfluid helium. So superfluid helium has a finite viscosity of the normal part, according to Landau's theory. It's finite. The first derivative of viscosity is infinite at the lambda transition. And there is a nice paper by Polyakov in 68 where he considered this question, and he found that that the viscosity is finite, and experimentally it's finite. Yeah, but the viscosity actually, diverges because the mean free path diverges. So you have eta that goes to infinity, and the S, the entropy, gogoes to zero because of Nernst theorem. So this ratio also diverges. So this ratio diverges as you take t to zero. So it goes to, it diverges because of the two facts. Eta goes to infinity because of the divergent mean free path, and S goes to zero because of Nernst theorem.
Also, you see for two other substances, it also goes up on the low temperature.
It goes up by a reason that I don't quite understand, but we can talk about that. Yeah. Okay. So we call that inequality of viscosity bound conjecture, that eta over S is bigger than h bar over 4 pi, and here I restore even the K Boltzmann. And this bound compare favorably to the entropy bound and the Bekenstein bound in the sense that it doesn't contain C and G, speed of light and the Newton constant. So, what is the implications for that bound for real world? We have the quark gluon plasma that is presumably created at Rigg. We know that the temperature of this plasma is not much bigger than the lambda QCD. The coupling cannot be neglected. The coupling is strong, so we have something in the strong coupling regime. And we need viscosity to do a more accurate hydrodynamic simulation of this system. So the conjecture that we have is that if we know the entropy density, the viscosity is bigger than this entropy density over 4 pi. The entropy density can be got, we can found from the lattice calculation, while the viscosity cannot. So this is a non-trivial constraint on the value of the shear viscosity. And we will hear. There are some indications of a small viscosity at Rigg, and we would like to understand whether this ratio actually satisfied, or how close is it to the value of 1 over 4 pi. Another system that is also very interesting. Is trapped atomic gases. This gas that is just fermion, non-relativistic fermion in a magnetic trap. And there is a dimensionless coupling constant, which is the product of the density multiplied to the cube of the scattering length between these particles. People now know how to tune this scattering length by hand by using the so-called Feshbach resonance. In this regime, and a cube much bigger than 1 goes to infinity, the system is very interesting because it has one scale. It is one scale problem, just the density supplies the scale. It's very similar to N equal 4 super Young-Mills theory at finite temperature. There is only one scale at finite temperature. And this system has been observed to behave hydrodynamically as one releases the system from the trap. It expands in a manner predicted by the hydrodynamic equation. So it would be very interesting if one can measure this ratio, the viscosity of this system, and look at how small this ratio eta over S can be. Yeah.
How
is there some idea of how to actually measure the entropy or measure the ratio?
Okay, so the entropy, so you have to measure the equation of state. So that is pressure as a function of chemical potential and temperature, for example. I think people know how to do that. The interesting observation there is that to fit the data, they have to have the pressure equal approximately 3/4 of the free gas. So another place where this approximate 3/4 appears. For the viscosity, you look at the expansion of anisotropic droplet of this system and then simulate this. Are you going to talk about that?
Yes.
Yeah. So we will hear about that.
If you could go to what one scale system is, there is no temperature and there is no entropy. There is just density. There is a similar formula.
Okay, so there are a lot of open questions that some of these are on this transparency. Why eta over s is equal h bar over 4 pi for such a wide class of theories? So the only thing that we know that are common in this theory is that they are all theories with a gravity dual description. So if I take away our knowledge about ADS CFT or gauge gravity duality, I don't know how to understand that eta over s equal 1 over 4 pi from a pure field theory point of view. So there is something missing in our field in our understanding of finite temperature field theory in this respect. So another question is that can one find some way to evade this equality? So can one find a theory with gravity dual where this ratio is not equal 1 over 4 pi? So all the theories that has been looked at so far are theory with zero chemical potential. So natural question is, if I put in chemical potential, would this ratio be different? So another question is whether this viscosity bound, that eta over s, is bounded from below, is actually correct, and how one can prove that using field theory or any techniques, and what are the assumptions one has to make in order for this inequality to be valid. And this, I don't understand this completely. Another thing that would be interesting is whether one can use the gauge gravity duality to shed some light on the hydrodynamic theory. For example, can one find the effective Lagrangian formulations of hydrodynamics, which is missing, by looking at gravity and try to look at the low energy dynamics of this horizon. And I know one example where gravity is somewhat useful, that is, in order to find out the hydrodynamics of theory with anomalous current, one can look at the gravity theory with anomaly in the bulk in the form of the Chern-Simons term in the action and look at how it implies for the hydrodynamics of anomalous current. And one of the graduate students in Seattle is working on that. Okay, so that's all.
Okay, we have time for question. That's a question from Andres Milka.
It's about, first question is about, maybe just short comment, about Lagrangian formulation of hydrodynamics. It exists actually, it's known for a long time, but not in terms of earlier variables in which Navier-Stokes equation are usually written, but in terms of Lagrange variables. Well, Lagrange variables, it's when the position of individual particles of the liquid depend on its initial position, and then it's very easy to write Lagrangian. Second comment, I don't know if Misha allows me, refers not only to your talk, but maybe more to the previous talk.
Okay, yes, we do have some time.
Okay, so it's about the use of the term quark-gluon plasma. If you open Landau-Lifshitz at the corresponding page, you find the definition of what is normal plasma. Normal plasma is the system with weak Coulomb-like interaction, which means that the interaction coupling constant is small. And so I think, I don't know, Edward can correct me, but when he introduced his term the first time, he also meant very high temperature well situation where the effective coupling constant is weak and you can describe the system in terms of gluon and quark degrees of freedom. But what we observe now at Rigg is not this system. There is no possibility to calculate things perturbatively, let's say. And so I just wouldn't call it quark gluon plasma, I would call it hot hadronic matter, so that you cannot indeed describe it in terms of individual hadron degrees of freedom already, but not yet are able to describe it in terms of quark and gluon degrees of freedom. So it's kind of no man land between two theoretical paradises. So that's
the comment. Okay. Other questions? Yes, please. Here is a question.
Other entropy bounds that you mentioned have a problem with sort of doubling the number of species. If you just increase the number of fields, you can get lots of entropy. So is this your conjecture subject to a similar problem?
Okay, so it doesn't suffer this problem in relativistic theory with zero chemical potential. That is because if I increase the number of, say, color in QCD, then the entropy is proportional to both entropy density and the viscosity goes to infinity with the same power of color. So it doesn't suffer this problem in the relativistic setup. Now, in non-relativistic setup, it's more subtle, and I think you can invent a situation when this bound is violated. You take just usual gas of particles, and then you say, let's assume that this gas, these particles are not of the same species, but you subdivide this gas by two subsystems. Then you have a Gibbs mixing entropy, and you can increase this Gibbs mixing entropy by increasing the number of species. And that growth is very slow. But eventually, because it's all in logarithmic, the entropy is proportional to the logarithm of the number of species. But eventually, if you take helium, eventually when the number of species equal to a billion, you can estimate that it's got violated. So this bound is clearly there is a counterexample in non-relativistic physics. So it's not clear. Well, I want to put this transparency again. We want to understand under which assumption there are some class of simple systems like water, nitrogen, and all these substances that we have looked at on the table that satisfies this bound.
Okay. Other questions, comments? Yes, there is a comment over there.
Just a question, really, on that, on your previous answer. Would this mixing entropy fail to vanish as you go to zero temperature?
The mixing entropy goes to zero. Well, there is a degeneracy temperature at which the quantum effect becomes important. The entropy of a classical gas, it doesn't go to zero. The entropy goes to zero because the gas is quantum. So if you have a gas of a particle with a large number of species, the degeneracy temperature goes to zero as the power of this number of different type of particles. So there is a, it goes to zero at any at any finite number of particles. Two limit do not commute.
Okay, I don't see any further questions. So let's thank the speaker again, and we reconvene for the third talk at 10 minutes past 11. Thank you.